future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
3-2 pitch, grounded deep at third base. Ramirez, another great play. In to score, Pena on the wide throw. The Astros lead 1-0. Pena speed. Scoring the first run of the game. So Altuve with the RBI base hit with a runner in scoring position. Now Walker flares one to right. That's going to drop in for a hit. In to score is Paredes. Altuve's being sent home. He's going to score. The throw missed both cutoff men by Nolan Jones. And the Astros score a run from first base on a single as Altuve never stopped. 3-0. Sends this one down the line and right, slicing. Jacob Melton will try and make a great catch.
He did it.
He made a phenomenal catch, landing in foul territory to save at least one, maybe two runs. Hopefully he's okay as he had a little bit of room before he ran into that wall. What a play by Jacob Melton.
Melton selling out his entire body to pick up Colton Gordon and the Astros. What a play.
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I am Brian McDonald, joined by Cam Smith and John Belmer. You can find us on X. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Johnny is at Third Coast Johnny, and Cam is at Clutch City Cam. That, of course, the Astros win last night over the Cleveland Guardians, thanks to Space City Home Network and the voice there of Todd Callis, who you can hear on the Killer Bees every Friday, and also former Astro Jeff Blum on the call. Of an impressive Astros win, not only because it's a road win, but because the team didn't get into Cleveland until 3 a.m., I believe it was, that day, because of the three-hour rain delay the night before in Pittsburgh, which, if you haven't seen the video, got Astros GM Dana Brown all sorts of pissed off.
Sure did.
Because it didn't seem like the rain was ever coming down hard enough to actually warrant a three-hour rain delay. The grounds crew and the team officials there just kept seemingly waiting and waiting for the perfect scenario to play. It's like, bro, you guys only play. This is your last game this year. There's no other opportunities to make this up. Just start the game. But yeah, impressive win by the Astros, who because of that win and because the Mariners also lost, are now 2.5 games up in the AL West. So look, this, we went through this obviously to a larger degree last year. They didn't get into first place until I believe mid-July last year. But another slow start this year. Obviously the Yankee series, no, they lost the Giants series towards the beginning of the year this year. Yankee was the year prior. And a lot, I think there's a lot of people maybe hand-wringing. You lose Alex Bregman, you lose Kyle Tucker, you're not sure how this team's going to respond, but boom, it's June 7th, the Astros are 2.5 games up in the division.
Yeah, and I mean,
they're inevitable, Cam.
We have this discussion every year, and every year it's the same thing. We know the Astros are going to start off slow. We know that we're used to a big piece of the Astros' previous team leaving. I think in years past, I guess it was bigger marquee names and bigger of like the foundation of the team.
I don't know. I mean, Alex Bregman, Kyle Tucker, that's pretty damn marquee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But like every year we're used to them leaving or somebody leaving. And then the next year we start off slow and people are like, oh, my God, the Astros window's over. Like, blah, 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 blah. I can't believe I go to all these games and spend all these money on these these tickets and flaunt about it. And then here we are again. And slow start, and who's in first place? The Astros. So that's why it's always funny, like when we ask each other, like, what's your concern level? And I feel like the majority of people at this point are like, oh, it's a 7 or 8, and it's just like, relax. It should be like a 2. Like, because
we are definitely in hindsight. Yeah, I mean, maybe you could argue it should be even lower than a 2 in hindsight because they're 2.5 games up. And I mean, I don't trust that the Mariners are going to figure things out, especially with their offense. We know their pitching's good, but like, I don't think as this goes on, the Astros are doing this without Yordan, right?
Yep.
They're doing this without arguably their third most talented pitcher in Spencer Arrighetti. So there's reason to believe the Astros could continue to improve. I don't see that same scenario with the Mariners. I mean, Kyle Riley's, you know, the big dumper is hitting a million home runs. They got a good pitching staff, but I just don't see them over the full season being capable of keeping up with the Astros, not only now, but once they get healthier with Yordan and Spencer Arrighetti returning. So, I mean, and then obviously there's a couple other pitchers who I don't think are coming back, but cross your fingers, maybe good news at some point happens with Luis Garcia and Christian Javier, although I don't expect to see them this season. But, I mean, looking at where the Astros are now, I don't know where I actually gave my concern level, but I did have a concern when they started slow that maybe this was the year where they lost too much. Like, we overcame losing Keuchel and Cole. We overcame losing Springer and Correa. We overcame losing Charlie Morton. I feel like I could throw more names on that list as well. But it did feel like this year, like, okay, maybe this is kind of the breaking point. They're not as talented, but, you know, error on me. I'll take the L on this one. The Astros, as like Thanos, are clearly inevitable, and this run is nowhere near ending at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, there was, I feel like, more of a concern going into this season. But until somebody else in that division
can actually consistently
win and have first place the entire season, which we haven't really seen, except I guess maybe when Texas in 23, but
even then, the Astros still won the division.
Yeah, and the Rangers are absolute trash right now. So it's just like, that's why I feel like my concern level is always a little lower, because nobody else in that division has been able to overtake Houston consistently. And so, yeah, we lose players, but I mean, like I said, until somebody else shows me something else, I'm going to assume that the Astros are going to win that division.
Yeah, and Johnny and I were talking about this before the show started, and that is definitely a part of the conversation. Not something I want to dwell on, because you can only control – I mean, you can't control what division you're in. Yeah. All you can do is try to win the games and be better than the other four teams in that grouping. But right now, if they're in the AL Central, the Astros are at 35 wins. The Tigers are at 42. So you trail them by a significant margin. Not as significant in the AL East, but you'd still trail. The Yankees have 39 wins to your 36, or to your 35, that is. So, yeah, if the Astros were in the AL East or in the AL Central, they would not be in first, but they're not. So it doesn't matter. They're in the AL West. And until, you know, further notice, the Astros run this division. So let's get into some of the stars from last night, some of the guys making the difference in that win, or that 4-2 win over the Guardians. Jeremy Peña, man, like, I'm ready to put him in the All-Star game. I don't know if he'll get that recognition. It seems like all those sort of things, like awards, although he did win Gold Glove his rookie year, but a lot of those awards and sort of credit for being like an All-Star seem to be a year behind for guys. Like, they'll do it, and then they have to do it again, and then they get the credit. But Peña, heading into the game last night – actually, no, this is after last night – hitting .324 now with his batting average with an OPS of .876. Look, I don't think he's the biggest lock as an All-Star for the Astros. I think Josh Hader and Hunter Brown are probably your two biggest locks. But I would say leaving Jeremy Peña out of the All-Star game, assuming he keeps up this caliber play. He's got a long way to go. It's June 7th. The All-Star game is a month from now. But there's no reason why he's playing a Gold Glove caliber, you know, defensive position at the most important defensive position in the game, and he's hitting. He's the best hitter on the team right now without Yordan.
Yeah. And that's what we always knew he was going to come through defensively.
Yeah.
We were always wondering when does that average and that stuff right there going to start picking up? And so right now for me, the fact that he is. And this is shortstops in American League, so this is why.
Oh, you have the current ranking.
Okay, I have the current rankings, and this is why he definitely deserves to be an All-Star. He's second in average for shortstops, first in runs, first in home runs, fifth in RBIs, second in OPS, first in WAR, and second in defensive WAR.
Yeah, and to add on to your WAR thing, not only so you said he's first in WAR among AL shortstops.
Yeah,
I believe he's second in all of baseball.
Yeah,
I think I heard Jeremy say that he's second in all of baseball in WAR. I would assume. Behind Judge
at five.
Or Otani? Okay. I would assume it would have been one of those two guys. So, I mean, I don't know how you leave Jeremy Peña out of the conversation, but as far as being an All-Star. But I think, like I said, Hader and Hunter Brown have to be in. I would put Jeremy Peña in. I think Fromber deserves to be in as well, and that's probably end of list. I mean, I think some Astros diehards would try to argue for Jake. And look, Jake's had a good season, but let's settle down. Like, I like Jake. He's had a great season, but let's settle down. But I mean,
I would say Isak over.
Yeah, Isak
Jake
would be.
At this point.
I don't think Isak will get there. He started slow, And again, these the credits for doing the work usually trail a year behind you actually doing it. At least with Pena, he's got the track record of being a Gold Glove in a World Series and ALCS MVP. So I think he's got a little bit more of that than Isak does. But I think you're looking at definitely Hader and Hunter Brown. I think probably Pena and Fromber, and then wild card, maybe a fifth Astro, if there is one, would be Isak.
Yeah, I think so. Cause
or maybe Brian Abreu, depending on the other relievers look like in the American League.
Brian Abreu is definitely deserving
his ERA is sick as well. So along with Pena, let's mention Jose Altuve, because it seems like we were and if you want to join in this conversation, I should mention the phone line. Give us a shout. You can text or call the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. Talking Astros this segment next. We'll get into some NFL and Texans coming up after that. But Jose Altuve, we spent previous weeks talking about Father Time might be catching up. He's 34, he's 35, whatever. Numbers are slowing down. Had a good start to the season, but really hit the skids there late April, early May, and into kind of mid to late May. But you look at Altuve, last 13 games, it was that two home run game against Tampa. So from that point, from that point to now, the last 13 games, Jose Altuve is hitting .360 with an OPS over 1,000, which has raised his slash line from a .238 average to .264, and OPS from .629 to .714. I'm not saying what happened a few weeks ago was a complete blip, because eventually he will slow down. I mean, eventually Tom Brady couldn't do it anymore, right? Eventually, guys, no matter how much of a lock of a Hall of Famer they are, no matter how great they are in their prime, eventually they do slow down, and at that age is different for everybody. But I don't think it's this year with Jose Altuve. Like, these last 2 weeks, last 13 games, hitting .360 with an OPS over 1,000 in multiple home run games, I think Jose Altuve is going to be just fine the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think he's going to be able to keep up the pace that he has at over the last 13 games.
No, he's not going to hit .360.
Yeah, but I feel like that pace is closer to what he is than what he started off in the beginning of the year, like really, really slow.
Agreed.
Like you said, over time, eventually, like you're going to slow down. Triples are going to turn into doubles. Doubles are going to turn into singles. You're going to lose some pop.
Home runs would turn into balls that fly out to the warning track.
Exactly. Yeah. But at least he's hitting at Minute Maid Park. And like you said, the two home run game, I was there, and some of those balls that those home runs, they were not short Crawford box home runs.
Oh, no,
I mean, some
no.
of these were like deep drives, and it's just like, Jesus, like to see him still do this, that's very reassuring.
Yeah. I mean, there's many reasons you could say it's crazy to see him do that. Now we're talking about age. Obviously, the conversation beforehand was he's 5'6 or whatever he is.
Yeah.
And he's doing things that guys at that height have never done. All right, we'll continue the Astros conversation over onto the other side of the break, talk about Jacob Melton, what he's done since being called up, and also the performance of Colton Gordon, the Astros starting pitcher last night. Coming up in the second hour, I believe Cam and Johnny Belmer will be sitting out for this because they're not the wrestling nerd that I am, but Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame, which you can hear Tuesdays and Wednesday nights here, along with the WWE Hall of Famer Booker T. He'll be joining us again at 1:15 to talk about Money in the Bank, which is tonight. I know you gentlemen know that. One of the biggest nights of the WWE calendar every year.
I do
that
know about Money in the Bank.
At 7 o'clock. Yeah, you troll me. So Brad Gilmore will join us at 1:15. Of course, Mount Rushmore Plus One will come up at 1:30. But on the other side of the break, as promised, we'll continue talking about your Astros. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. This is The Bullpen with Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and Johnny Belmer. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, before we get into exactly what I teased from the Astros, I just saw this pop up on Twitter as I was sending out a tweet to promote the rest of the show. Someone put up a side-by-side stat comparison of Isak Paredes, who we were just talking about, being a possible All-Star nominee from the Astros this year, side-by-side with the guy that made $700 million this offseason, Juan Soto.
Yep.
Right now, WAR. Just let's just start at the top of the list, right? WAR. Isak Paredes, 2.0. Juan Soto, 2.0. So, I mean, look, obviously Juan Soto's a great player. This will not continue to be this low for him, but it just kind of highlights how good Isak Paredes has been.
Technically, Isak is now 2.1.
Oh, is it updated? Okay.
It is updated.
Okay. Yeah, this – oh, I just see now. This tweet was from 23 hours ago. So, yeah. Okay, the update from including last night's game puts Isak – ahead of Juan Soto is what you're telling me?
Yeah, his WAR is 2.1 now.
2.1, wow. And, I mean, Isak has them basically everywhere except for steals and on-base percentage. He's got more hits than Juan Soto, more homers, more RBI, better batting average, better slug, better OPS, better OPS plus. Actually, OPS plus is tied. They're both 130. So, yeah, I mean, obviously Cam Smith was the jewel. I don't say that just because you're here.
Thank you.
Cam Smith was the jewel of the trade that sent Kyle Tucker to the Cubs. But, man, great move from Dana Brown to get Isak Paredes into that deal as well, because he may – I mean, Cam Smith was what you did the deal for, but Isak Paredes might be what we talk about as the biggest win of that trade looking, you know, three or four years from now looking back.
Oh, yeah, and I mean – That was going to be a key piece, because you're going to lose Bregman, and you don't have really anybody on this team that you feel comfortable throwing in at third. Like, you're not going to put Dubon at third. I know Dubon is a utility guy, but Dubon has predominantly played outfield and second base, not really third base. You're not going to move Peña over. You're sure as hell not going to move Altuve to third base in that hot hole.
Why not? Let's move him everywhere.
Sure.
Left field. I mean, Biggio played center field. Why not?
And catcher. So, yeah, and I mean, catcher. I guess it could be done, but no, he is... Isak is, I feel like he's always kind of flown under the radar as like a really good player.
Well, you're right. Like in Tampa, he showed great power. He had a 30 home run season there. But I think people knocked him because he was so pull heavy. Like literally until this year, every single home run. I don't know if he's had an oppo this year, but I know coming into the year, he had never hit an opposite field homer. Every homer was to the pull side. And then he gets traded to Chicago last year. And like fell apart. But I remember having this conversation with Joe George. It's like trying to figure out like why did he struggle so much in Chicago. And obviously Joe's from the area, knows that stadium pretty well. And he pointed out what should have been the obvious things. Like, well, by the time the Isak got there, he got there in the part of the year where the wind starts blowing in a lot.
Yeah.
And specifically blowing in from left field, where Isak tries to hit everything to left field. So that, I think that. Simple answer. I think that's why Isak Paredes struggled so much last year.
Well, yeah, and to that
in
point,
Chicago.
To that point, I was actually I forgot what I was listening to. I don't know if it was like a, I know it was an interview with I believe the GM from Chicago, and he basically talked about the same thing about how there's the players for Chicago. There's a lot of times that they'll have to get to the stadium early to figure out what the wind's going to do, because in certain parts of the year that
you might not be able to hit a certain direction.
That wind is psychotic. So that further, you know, kind of validates what like Joe was saying, where, you know, Wrigley Field is just, it's an anomaly. Like it's a weird stadium to hit in. Like, you obviously it's open door and stuff like that, but yeah, parts of the time of the year it is hard to hit in that ballpark. So,
and it has extremes both ways. Like, there's some days when the wind's blowing out, all you got to do is get it up in the air and see ya. See ya.
Goodbye.
And there's other days you could hit it 600 feet, it feels like, and it not go out because the wind knocks it
down. Well, we kind of saw that with Kyle Tucker. He started on fire this year with Chicago, and he's kind of, as the months have gone by, his production has kind of dropped. So that stadium is very much, like, difficult to hit in, but... You know, back to Isak. I mean, he's. I thought he was going to perform well here, but he's outperforming where I thought that he would be.
Would you try to re-sign him now to a long term deal? What is your temperature on him long term?
I mean, he's only 25, 26?
26.
I mean, I don't think that we're. Yeah, I mean, at this point. We need to solidify some of those pieces, especially the corner pieces. I mean, we're still kind of
Well, you're signed in. Yeah, you're locked into Christian Walker for this year and the next two.
Yeah, but with Isak being 26 and seeing what he can do in Minute Maid, I don't understand why they wouldn't. Sorry.
Bam.
Dykin.
Johnny popped
sorry.
In.
Dykin Field or, yeah,
Dykin,
sure.
Dykin Park?
Yeah.
Dykin State? I don't know. Dykin something. The Icebox.
That, yeah.
Listen to the Icebox. Thursday, sometimes Fridays at 6 o'clock with Joe George and Jeremy Brown.
Yeah, you know that stadium
how'd you
in
like
downtown.
That plug there, Johnny? Did I get that in pretty naturally?
I'll say 6.5 out of 10.
6.5? All right, I'll take it. You're mostly a critic for me for comedic effects, so I'll take a 6.5. But I'm trying to get this to load. Our Wi-Fi has been terrible today, but I'm pretty sure I saw the contract projection on Isak Paredes from Spotrac the other day, and it was in the range of like $23 million a year, which I think if that's the going rate for Isak Paredes, I'd be all in on that.
Like, absolutely.
For comparison, the last couple years, Alex Bregman was making 30. And I do think Alex Bregman is a better player overall, especially with his range as a fielder. Like, I have no problem with the balls that Isak gets to. I have faith he's going to, you know, make the play
yeah.
and get it over to first base or, you know, wherever it needs to go. I don't think he gets to as many balls as Alex Bregman. Bregman's range is better. But, I mean, Isak, I think he's got a better eye at the plate, which is crazy to say because that's Alex Bregman's superpower. But Isak has been great with his patience at the plate, and the on-base percentage backs it up. And he's got – now, I know Bregman had a 40-home-run season, but I feel like that was a different Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a completely different guy that's not coming back. But I've been happy with Isak's power. So, yeah, if the number is around – or lower, like I'll just put it like this. If the number is below 25 per year, lock him up.
Have to.
That's kind of my feeling on it.
Four years at $100 million, like, sign me up.
Yeah, 4 years, 100. And now he's got this year, I think they probably look to go beyond that. If I had to guess, like if I'm Dana Brown and Jim Crane, he's got this year and two more under team control, and he's 26. I'd probably be looking to go to age 32. So maybe buy out the remainder of his arbitration plus three. I mean, that's just kind of thinking out loud. I mean, we'll see what the Astros do. But I think that's kind of the window you'd be looking at. But let's talk about some of these other Astros for a minute. Jacob Melton, we heard him in the highlight coming in. Again, thanks to Space City Home Network and Todd Callis on the call. Hasn't hit much since he's come up. And I didn't really expect him to. Like, his profile as a minor league as a hitter has been kind of up or down. But, man, that diving catch he made going into the right field wall there in foul territory was unbelievable. Saw this posted.
Sports Center top 10.
What, did it make it?
It was number 6 or 7.
It should have. I saw this posted by Jeremy Branham. The catch odds on that play was just 35% for him to make the catch, which, honestly, I thought it'd be even lower. And then apparently Melton on that play, his speed reached 29.1 feet per second. Dude is blazing. Like,
pretty,
I don't know.
That's pretty fast?
That's pretty fast. I don't know if he's going to slug. I don't know if he's going to hit for a high average, but I have great faith that, you know, if a ball gets slowly hit in the infield, he's going to beat it out most of the time. He's going to have infield hits like we see with Altuve. And when he's in the field, he's going to make a ton of plays for you.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think the expectation is we need Jacob to come in and start slugging. I mean, he's in there to give the other guys a day off. I mean, that is basically what he is being.
Well, I think he's going to start. I don't think he's just a day off guy. Like, I think they're bringing him up, and I think especially because he's a left-handed bat, and until Yordan gets back, you're very right-handed heavy.
Yeah.
I think unless he proves he's not capable, he is going to be your everyday left fielder. Or at least I think he should be. Let's couch it like this. Until Yordan gets back, I see no reason why Jacob Melton shouldn't be your left fielder, and Altuve would either then be at second base or DH. Now, once Yordan gets back, Yordan's your DH, and so then you have to have the conversation. Well, on days when Fromber and Hunter are pitching, respecting ground balls, do we want Altuve back in left field for defensive purposes? And then Jacob Melton doesn't have anywhere to play.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a conversation for when Yordan comes back. But until Yordan comes back, Melton should be playing every day.
And I would be fine with, obviously, you know, sliding Altuve back, because it's been about a week since I saw this, but somebody put out a tweet, and they were talking about comparing Altuve's war in the outfield to second base. And in the 10 or 11 games that he actually started at second base, he had a plus WAR.
Yeah, so his defense has improved this year.
His defense was better at second base than we've seen the last couple of years. So I would totally be comfortable with sliding Altuve back to second base, because obviously you're not getting anything out of Rodgers. So, I mean,
I know, and then he hit a home run last night. Yay! And I'm like, oh, what? The you know,
finally,
oh, yeah,
he got a hit.
I'm the so $2 million done with Rodgers. I'm so done with Rodgers. Yeah, we're getting so far he's what, 2 home runs on the year, so $1 million per homer. so far,
he's done. That's
it, yeah, that's
2
that's
home
it.
Runs. That's all.
It.
That's all.
Well,
he gives
hopefully
us.
He's done. Hopefully they just release him at some point, not to rehash that conversation. But yeah, I think, I mean, unless Jacob Melton really, until Yordan gets back. That should be Jacob Melton's window to prove, can he stay up or does he need to go back down to AAA? So, I mean, I don't expect Yordan back for 3-4 weeks. So, I mean, that's a pretty decent chunk. You know, give Melton a month, see if he can handle it. If he can, he goes back down to AAA when Yordan comes up. But we'll see how that plays out. And the other guy we need to talk about real quick, because, look, I've had concerns about the depth of this rotation. Especially, you know, when Spencer Arrighetti had the fluke injury of getting his thumb broken while batting practice was going on. And, you know, you lose Ronel Blanco to yep. season-ending injury. What was the other injury I'm trying to think of? They had this. Oh, Wesneski. They lose Wesneski to the season-ending
injury.
Yeah, Hayden Wesneski from this area. Lose him to a season-ending injury as well. So there was some serious depth concerns there. Now, the Lance returning being as good as he did, and shout out to Lance, picking up his first win since 2022 against the Pirates tonight, out-dueling Paul Skeens.
Yeah, that was impressive.
I mean, Paul Skeens made one mistake. I mean, it was one mistake to Christian Walker, but still.
Skeens is also in Pittsburgh, so.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Shout out to his future team, the LA Dodgers. There's no way he stayed in Pittsburgh long term. You know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't want it to happen, but you know what's going to happen. He ain't staying in Pittsburgh. But yeah, like I've had some concerns about the depth of this rotation because it kind of felt like Hunter, Fromber, for the rest of the rotation. Thankfully, Lance has made the third spot, you know, pretty stable at the moment, although you don't know how that long that'll last. But shout out to Colton Gordon, who his first four starts this year gave up at least 3 runs or more. Last night, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 5 Ks. So if Colton Gordon, not that I expect him to give up 1 run or less every game, but if he can be a stable, you know, 5 innings, 2 earned run sort of guy as your fourth behind the resurging Lance and behind Hunter and Fromber, suddenly the depth of this rotation until Arrighetti gets back doesn't really look like that much of a concern. Like, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on Colton Gordon overall, but, I mean, it was pretty I thought he was better than the numbers he put up through the first four games. The stats weren't great, but I thought he looked better than that. And last night kind of seemed to pay that off.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be the first to say, like, I was super concerned, like, with the starting pitching. But I feel a little bit better about it just because of how good the bullpen has been. I guess my only concern, and this is just me being nitpicky, is when McCullers came back, I think kind of the expectation was we just need him to be good at the bottom of the rotation. Like, we don't want to apply all this pressure. We don't want to make it seem like he has to be like that great third guy in the rotation. But here we are, injuries later, and McCullers is that third guy in the rotation. So my only concern is just like, please, Lance, just like, don't overdo it. Like, we need you to be
better.
And they
are letting him to that point. Yeah. He was supposed to start Sunday, but they're moving him back. Like, they're buying him some extra time.
Yeah.
So I think that's smart.
Which is smart.
Him. Yeah.
Because if Lance goes down, then you're...
Then you're in... You're, you need to make screwed. A trade or you're in serious trouble because, I mean, I know I'm done with Ryan Gusto. Like, see you later. Like, he's not quite the Brendan Rodgers of the starting pitching staff, but I don't want to see Ryan Gusto in the starting rotation anymore if they have any other option. All right. We're going to end the Astros conversation over for now and head over to the Texans on the other side of the break when we get back on the bullpen. If you want to join in that conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So the question to you guys will be, the Texans offensive line needs to be top what in the NFL in order for this bet on chemistry Trey Tunsil experiment to be a success? We'll discuss that and more when the bullpen returns on the ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
We'll be right back. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I am Brian McDonald, joined by Cam Smith and John Bellmer, as always. If you want to find us on Twitter, send us a comment there. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Cam is at Clutch City Cam, and Johnny's at Third Coast Johnny. And you can also call or text the HRMP listener line. That'll get to us as well. That number is 713-780-3776. Reminder at 1:15, any nerds out there for wrestling like myself, Brad Gilmore from the Hall of Fame, along with Booker T, will be on the show. They're promoting their fact that they're going to have a live show at 4 o'clock on ESPN National. Looking ahead to UFC 316, Johnny, I know that's a card you're looking forward to. So it'd be interesting to see what Brad and Booker T have to say about the UFC. So if you're interested in that, tune into this very network here at 4 o'clock for their preview of that card. But we're going to talk Texans right now, and again, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776 if you want to call or text in. Oh, we got a little football. No, keep it going, Johnny. It gets me pumped up. Now, I do have one critique of this song. Only one. There's only one note here. Because otherwise, Clay Walker, masterpiece, right?
Just one.
Just one. In the song, it says, not we're ready to win. Not we're ready to dominate. We're what ready to, anything like that. It just says, we're ready to play. Like, it feels a little passive.
Well, you play to win.
Oh, thank you, Herm. But I don't know. It feels a little passive to say, yeah, we're fired up. We're all here. We're ready to
play.
Not we're ready to win. We're ready to kick their ass. It's we're like ready to dominate. We're ready to
setting us up for the participation.
Play. Yeah. Was that the problem with the Chargers when they visit NRG?
Next question. Obviously. They were ready to play, to win.
Herbert was not ready to play in those four picks.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. That was an unnecessary sideswipe at Cam's Chargers. All right.
It's quite okay.
Yeah. Texans. We're going to talk Texans here. So I had this thought because it seems like a lot of people, including obviously the Texans themselves, because frankly they have, what else are they going to say? But there seem to be a lot of people betting on the idea of, even though that the offensive line on paper looks less talented with the sending of Laremy Tunsil out to the Washington Commanders, that they're betting on this idea that, okay, maybe you're less talented, but because maybe Tunsil wasn't a team first guy, maybe he didn't have that dog in them, you also lose Shaq Mason from last year, that maybe even though this team is less talented on the offensive line, that if you get more guys who fit D'Amico's swarm mentality, more dogs, more guys who are willing to fight and scrap for every yard, which I think you could argue despite how talented he was, Tunsil wasn't that guy, that you think the offensive line could be better than last year, which has kind of been my pushback on all these moves. Like, your offensive line sucked, and you made it less talented, arguably on paper. I know you added Ursary in the second round. You made some moves with Lakin Tomlinson and Ed Ingram at guard, but you look on paper less talented than you were a year ago, and that offensive line sucked. But they're betting on chemistry. My question to you, how good does the Texans offensive line had to rank? And I think they were 30th last year. Like, Texans have to be a top what offensive line in order for us to look back after the season and go, okay, the experiment worked.
I would say Top 20.
That was where Jeremy said it when we had this conversation on the Killer 20. Bees. And I think that's fair because now my initial answer was you got to be average, right? I think in order for this team to get where it's been, because you're relying on two rookies, you know, wide receiver, mm-hmm. to make a big contribution. I don't know what you have in your tight end room. A lot of that looks kind of meh in the running back room. Joe Mixon's 29. You know he's going to miss a few games at some point, and I'm not really sure the depth behind him. So because of all of that, I thought they needed a little bit more. I thought they needed to be at least like 16th, basically right at that cusp of top half.
Right.
If you're average to a little bit better than average, then I think this offensive line is a success, and the Texans can do everything they want to do on offense. But to your point, and this is the point that Jeremy Branham made when we had the conversation the other day, like, you were pretty close, the Texans, that is. The Texans were pretty close to beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead
yeah.
with bottom three offensive line in the league. So I do think I'm being brought around to your point of view from where I initially stood at 16th to, like, if they get from bottom three to 20th, I think that might be enough to say that this offensive line has improved and get the Texans to a point where they could go further than they did the year before.
Yeah, and then, like, obviously everybody wants to have that elite O-line like Philly's had and Dallas has had in the past, but not every group.
Although they just lost Ragnow, so.
Yeah, but it's so hard to, like, put together that perfect team. So as long as the other pieces are clicking, the O-line for me, like I said, as long as they're top 20, I think they'll be okay. And you're obviously hoping for, you know, healthier, you know, your offensive weapons being healthier than they were last year. Obviously, that Nico Collins hit was bad. That Stephon Diggs injury was hurt. Like, all their best offensive weapons, essentially besides CJ, were hurt. And you're banking on them to come back healthy. And there was also something interesting that I overheard where they're talking about how, like, last year Texans were, like, one of the slowest teams to, like, get to the line.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
A lot of confusion.
All the time where Stroud was looking over, was like, I need the play.
Yeah, like, yeah. A lot of just confusion in the huddle. And so a lot of times that can rush plays, and obviously that's going to go poor for you. So if they can get to the huddle, and like you said, with the chemistry of the O-line, they work together as, like, a group. Like, obviously you're going to have individual offensive linemen that are better than the others, but as a totality, they work together as a group. You know, like, that's like a little family to them.
Yeah, five fingers make a fist.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
So if they're all in unison in the huddle and they can get to the line and they're not scrambling, then that's obviously going to take away from some of the negative plays. And so, yeah, like, that's why I go back to just give me a top 20 O-line and I think they'll be good.
Yeah, I think that's – obviously we spent most of last year when talking about what was holding back the Texans offense, and rightfully so, talking about the offensive line. But I think that as you were talking about that, I agree with your point overall. Like, I don't know if we spent enough time on – look, I mean, Diggs tore his ACL, what, week 7, week 8,
yeah.
Missed the rest of the year. Tank Dell got hurt in Kansas City, missed the rest of the year. Nico Collins at one point missed 5 games. Joe Mixon, I believe, missed like 4 games. So you had basically all of your offensive stars either miss half the year or miss, you know, significant chunks during the middle of the year, to where – even if the offensive line had been good, like, I don't know if the Texans offense wouldn't have still taken a step back because of the injuries. And we saw that the year before where Tank Dell with the broken leg when he's blocking inside.
Yeah.
Like, we, and then Nico Collins also missed a couple games that year. I believe it was with the hamstring. Maybe it wasn't a hamstring. I don't remember exactly. But he missed at least 2 games the year prior as well. So maybe that is, like, with adding to that, a much better offensive play caller, we hope, with Nick Caley replacing Bobby Slowick, because that's the other thing I don't think we spent enough time talking about. I've seen reports from people who studied the tape that call what Bobby Slowick was doing last year with his protections, like, just archaic, like, just, like, completely unprepared, like, juvenile,
yeah.
Like, amateurish, I think, is what they put onto him. Like, just completely amateur play calling and protection. So
the league figured him out.
Completely so. So if you get back to average with your play calling and your protections because you made a change with the offensive line with the play caller, and you maybe, hopefully, cross your fingers, knock on wood, get better health at wide receiver, running back, and get the offensive line to top 20, that certainly, I think, could add up to a jump up in the efficiency and effectiveness of the Texans offense and maybe reverse what we saw last year of the step back from C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of like the history of the NFL, you would assume with C.J.'s abilities that he went through his sophomore slump like a lot of really good quarterbacks do. Now he's year 3, so you're right to assume that he's going to be individually better than last year too, regardless of what the weapons around him are. So, yeah.
All right, so we're going to take a break here on the other side. Some big stuff has been happening in the NFL, especially with the quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers finally signed, decided he would pick a team to play football for this next season. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Anthony Richardson and his shoulder injury directly affecting the Texans, the AFC South, one of their competitors, losing who we think will probably be their starting quarterback to start the year. And then there was a really, really, really hot take about J.J. McCarthy that if you haven't heard, you have to hear. That and more when the bullpen returns. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN.
97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, Johnny Bellmer here with you until 2 o'clock. We'll have another show next week. And if we're looking ahead to next hour, make sure you keep tuned here. 1:15, Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame, alongside Booker T, will join us at, again, 1:15 to talk about WWE Money in the Bank taking place tonight. They'll be on at 4 o'clock on these very same airways previewing UFC 316. And Brad Gilmore also has a book out on the Back to the Future movie series. So if that's something you might be interested, worth checking out. We'll talk about that with him when he joins us again, 1:15. And then 1:30, of course, Mount Rushmore plus one. But big news right now in the NFL, or a couple days ago, that is, with Aaron Rodgers finally doing what we all knew he was going to do and signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, look, it's an improvement because they no longer have to start Mason Rudolph. So, okay, they improved from where they were the day before Aaron Rodgers signed. Although I'm not particularly sold that he's going to be that much better than Russell Wilson was last year. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers' overall career, far superior to Russell Wilson. Yes. It'd be silly to argue the opposite. But right now in 2025, like, I know some of the numbers for Aaron Rodgers look pretty good, or at least a little bit resurgent to what we saw his last year in Green Bay. But I don't know. Like, I digging into these numbers, Cam, I'm interested to see what you think about this. Because I remember people will point to, he's like, oh, he threw like 28 touchdowns last year. His interception ratio is pretty good. The yards were up. Like, people kind of seem to take, even though the Jets had a losing record, that Aaron Rodgers, that, like, I've heard this narrative that Aaron Rodgers was better than you thought. Okay, true, but I think if you dig into that, a lot of that is, well, he got Devontae Adams in the middle of the year. Like, Aaron Rodgers has shown, like, he only trusts a few wide receivers. There's a reason why, as soon as he signed with the Jets, they brought in Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard, right? Yep. There's a reason why they traded for Devontae Adams in the middle of the year. He has a hard time getting on the same page with wide receivers, a hard time trusting wide receivers to do what he wants them to do on routes. So, before I looked at the numbers. Before Devontae Adams signed with the Jets, and then after Devontae Adams, which was week 7, that was his first game with the Jets. So before Devontae Adams got to the Jets, Aaron Rodgers was completing 61% of his passes, went up to 63%, almost 64%, when Devontae Adams got there. Now, yards actually went in the favor of without. It was 228 to 231 in favor of without. So that's actually flying in the face of this. But when you look at the other two numbers I'm going to point out, his quarterback rating and his touchdown-to-interception ratio, I think that tells you the biggest story. Without without Devontae Adams, 9-5 on his touchdown to interception ratio, so not even 2-1. With Devontae Adams, 19-6, better than 3-1.
There it is.
Massive jump. And then quarterback rating, as you would expect, follows suit. Quarterback rating without Devontae Adams, an 84. With Devontae Adams, a 94, up 10 points. So Devontae Adams is in L.A.
Yep.
He's with the Rams. Now, I mean, Steelers do have DK Metcalf, a very talented wide receiver, but he's never worked with Rodgers, and they really don't have a lot else in that wide receiver room now that George Pickens is in Dallas with the Cowboys. So, look, I know Rodgers looked resurgent over the second half of the year once he got Devontae Adams, but I'm not convinced that with DK Metcalf, basically DK Metcalf alone, that Rodgers is going to be as good numbers-wise as he was last year once Devontae Adams got to New York.
Don't forget Pat Freiermuth.
Freiermuth?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to
yeah.
say?
Yeah,
Freiermuth. Pat Freiermuth? Okay. I mean, did you know who he was talking about with the way he pronounced
I
that?
I did not, know.
Say that again.
Pat Freiermuth. The tight end? No? Oh, well.
He is a tight end,
he's
yes.
He's there.
The guy you said, I don't know if he exists. I've never heard of Pat Freiermuth. But Pat Freiermuth, yes, is the Steelers starting tight end.
Yeah, no, you make some good points because you don't know. He's never played with DK, so you don't know what their chemistry is going to be. I'm okay saying that he is definitely an upgrade over Russell Wilson, but that doesn't mean that I'm saying he's going to be top 10 quarterback But it's Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh wins with garbage-ass quarterbacks. So
that's true, but they only win enough to get to the playoffs. Once, true. I mean, Mike Tomlin, I believe it's since 2008, doesn't have a playoff win.
Yeah.
Fact check me on that, but I believe he doesn't have a playoff win since 2008. And Mike Tomlin, obviously, I think someday is going to go into the Hall of Fame. He has been an elite coach. It's remarkable that he's been able to go his entire 20-plus year career without having a losing season.
Yeah, that's insane.
Completely remarkable and worth celebrating. But
says they won a playoff game in 2017.
Okay. That's eight years ago, still a while. I don't remember where the 2008 thing came from, but thank you for following up on that, Johnny. But you see from Steeler fans online, like they've started to grow a little wary of, okay, we know you're going to win 10 games because the defense is going to be great, and you're going to Mike Tomlin your way into 10 wins with ball control and things like that. But not getting past that first round, not challenging, like even when they get past that first round, they're not really challenging to be a true Super Bowl contender. I think that's fair to say. Like, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers coming in and basically repeating last year's success of, let's say, 10 wins, one and done in the playoffs, I don't know if that's enough to satisfy the Steelers fans right now.
It's almost kind of like Andy Reid in Philly. Like, you knew that you were...
At least Andy Reid was getting to conference title games.
Very true. Very true. But even that consistency started to wear thin on Philly fans.
They did.
So it's kind of amazing that Tomlin has survived this long, especially with the Steelers, because when you think of Pittsburgh, you think of that's what you think of. You think of the Steelers.
I thought you were going to say coaching stability, because he's only, what, the third coach they've had? It went Chuck Knoll to Kalashaw.
Oh, my God, I'm blanking on the name, too.
Oh, my God.
Mustache.
Cower.
There it is. Bill Cower. There it is.
It went from Chuck Knoll to Bill Cower to Mike Tomlin. And that traces back to, what, the late 60s?
Yeah.
Three coaches?
But what I'm saying is, like, in terms of when you think of this, like, Pittsburgh sports-wise, like, your instant thought is...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Your instant thought is the Steelers. So it's been pretty remarkable that he's lasted this long. I feel like every year there's all, like, especially the last couple of years, there's always a little bit of talk of, like, okay, is this Mike Tomlin's like last year? Like, when are they going to finally be like?
I think he's a bit on the hot seat. If he goes one and done again, I look, because here's the other side of it. Like, okay, people are still going to be excited to get into the playoffs. Like, that's not nothing, right? But the other side of it is, like, they, since Ben Roethlisberger hung it up, they can't get the next QB because they're still winning 10 games every year, right? They're going to have to at some point. Unless they get lucky, and they didn't with Kenny Pickett, who they drafted in like the 22nd, 23rd overall, he and his baby hands, who I think his career high in touchdown passes is like 9. Like, he was comically bad as a first round draft pick. But they're not going to, most likely, they're not going to get that next guy. They're not going to get their next Ben Roethlisberger unless they're bad enough to have a pick good enough to draft that guy. But if Mike Tomlin keeps piecing it together with Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and whoever else in manufacturing their way to 10 wins, it feels like they're going to be forever trapped in this purgatory of one and done playoffs.
Real
quick, I just want to add one thing to that. I think that Mike Tomlin's not on the hot seat, and I think just because of how good of a coach he is. But I think instead of being in that purgatory, like you said, you win too many games, you're drafting too low or too high. Or which one is it? Drafting too low,
drafting too low.
Yeah. What you do is then you plan ahead, right, and you trade up into those spots. You sacrifice something there to get up into those spots. I don't think Mike Tomlin's on the hot seat. He's too good of a coach.
I don't know. I mean, what Johnny's presenting, I think, is probably the rational thought. You don't fire a coach who's been that good. But I don't know if rational thinking is always going to play itself out with NFL fans and sometimes with the people making decisions with this team, right? I mean, we've seen how many coaches over recent years get 1 year or not even make it through. Like Denver fired, what's his name, that went to the Jets, the Aaron Rodgers buddy. They fired him midway into the year. Carolina recently.
Oh, Sala?
No, not Sala. It was the coach before Sala. He was, Sala was the coach of the Jets. He was, he was the offensive coordinator in Green Bay, went to Denver. Didn't make it through the full year and then became the Jets OC.
Fangio?
No, that's the DC. I'm talking about the OC. Something Hackett. Doesn't matter. Anyway.
Oh, Nathaniel Hackett?
That might be his name. Yeah. That might be his name. Point being, like, we saw Denver recently, you know, not even let their first-year head coach get through a single year. We saw Carolina recently do the same thing, not let their coach get through a full year. Jaguars have had a one-and-done with Urban Meyer recently. Like, rational thinking, although it was fair with Urban Meyer, he was a disaster. Rational thinking of it takes time, or this guy is winning a lot, we should not, instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, let's just tweak it a little bit. I don't know if that rational thinking always prevails in NFL circles.
Yeah, and I think more to that, too, is it's also like the division. Like, eventually...
You're behind Lamar, you're behind Burrow.
Like, yeah. you are the third team in that division, and those two other teams are essentially powerhouses. And I know this might be a stretch comparison, but it's kind of like back in the day when R.C. Slocum was very good at A&M, was winning a lot of games, but A&M could never overtake UT, and that was ultimately the downfall to RC. It was pretty much nothing else. It was just the fact that A&M can never overcome UT. And so now we're getting to the point where not only is Pittsburgh, they are consistently good, but not only are they not winning in the playoffs now, but they're falling behind Cincinnati and Baltimore. And in that division, I feel like that's a big no-no.
Yeah. No, because you have to kind of look at yourself like, okay, we're good enough to win 10 games. We're good enough to get to the playoffs. But, I mean, quarterback is king, right? You don't have a better quarterback than the Ravens do with Lamar. You don't have a better quarterback than the Bengals do with Joe Burrow. You're like, you're kind of, you know, solidly. I know the Bengals didn't make the playoffs the last couple of years, but you're in a way pretty solidified as being, as you said, the third team in that division. And really the only way to reset that is to get a quarterback that can compete with those two.
Yeah.
And you're never going to do that if you're winning 10 games and making the playoffs. But other side of the break, we're going to go ahead and get out now. We want to talk some NBA Finals on this side, but I still have to play this hot J.J. McCarthy take. We can't
finish
the show without getting to it. So we'll hear that on the other side of the break. Plus, we'll get our thoughts on Pacers and Thunder Game 1, that when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.